Welcome to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm Jen Godet, your fearless host, entrepreneur, investor, and business strategist. Why are we here? Because iron sharpens iron, and when we bring industry disruptors and leaders, investors, entrepreneurs, to share what's working in business, and maybe some of what's not, we're able to learn and grow. As a result, our businesses grow, and the ripple effect impacts not only ourselves, our teams, and their family, but also our communities and our world. Buckle up, because today we're going to dive deep. We're going to talk about what really happens behind growth, partnerships, and exits, because the deal is only one part of the story. What matters just as much is alignment, access, leadership, and whether the business is actually built to create freedom. Joining me today are Brittany Anderson and Deesha Solanki. Brittany brings a powerful lens on culture, systems, and building businesses that run with strength from the inside out. And Deesha has spent nearly two decades helping founders stop being the bottleneck and build companies with real scale and enterprise value. Brittany and Deesha, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jen. We are ecstatic to be here.
Absolutely.
I am so stoked that you're here as well. Let's start here. When founders think about growth, when they think about partnerships, or even when they think about that eventual exit, because everybody thinks I'm going to be in this forever. I don't need an exit, but maybe it might happen. Where do they usually go wrong first?
You know, I think there is a lack of clarity that can cause people to steer in the wrong direction. So I'll say this, that there are so many consultants, strategists, business advocates, all kinds of people out there that give advice based on their own experiences and or how they've supported others. And I think sometimes where entrepreneurs go wrong is they take that as their own path, versus getting granularly clear on what it is that they actually want. So when you talk about planning for an exit, why do you want the exit? What is that going to do? What is it going to fuel? What are you going to do post-exit? You know, there's plenty of entrepreneurs out there in Deesha's and my inner circle who have made the conscious decision to not exit because they want to sell to their employees, or they want it to be multi-generational, family passed down. So I think it's that lack of clarity is where people go wrong initially. Deesha, what did I miss there?
I also think it has a lot to do with identity. Who are they as a human as well? And that goes back right back to what you said. A lot of people don't want to exit, or they think they want an exit. And when it really comes to it, they don't want one. It's not aligned with them. They don't know what they're going to do afterwards. And they've lost themselves somewhere in that too. And there's a piece of finding yourself as well.
You know, I couldn't agree more with you. I tell you, so many people come to me for exit prep, especially, and they're like, oh, I'm just ready to do this. And they come from a space of they're just really burned out. And the reality is it's a founder-dependent business. And so when I get deeper and I'm like, okay, so why are we exiting? And they're like, I'm ready to hang up the cleats, I'm done. But really what's fueling that is the fact that they're doing too much in their business, and they're operating their maybe $25, $30 million business the same way they did when they were building it in the first million. So they're really, really involved. And then when we take a step back, they go, wait a minute, if you exited your role, why would you give up this kind of cash flow? You know, like, look at what that is. Have you guys experienced that? And what advice would you have for the people watching? Because I know there's people watching who are like having that day and they're like, man, I'm just ready to throw it all in. Like, what are your experiences there? And what advice do you have for the people who are watching who may be in that sort of a situation?
You know, it's funny that you bring this up, because I think it depends on sometimes even the hour, the time of day where you're like, that's it. I'm done. I'm out. So, I, you know, we can only speak from our own personal experience. But I think taking that step back, you kind of mentioned, Jen, you know, if you can set up your systems and your business to run without you, and at the same time, make sure that your team, your clients, your customer base is all taken care of, That's all part of the way out. So I think any time that you're in that state where all of a sudden, especially if you accompany this feeling by overwhelm, it's important to take that step back, take a breath, and just say, okay, why do I want to sell? Why am I suddenly feeling like this? If it's truly because you're at a point where you're ready to pass the baton, you're ready to move on to your next, you have, you know, something else in the way or in the wind, then maybe you do explore. But if it is because of bottleneck or because of burnout, or you're tired, your attention is pulled, then I think it's important to pull in outside consultation, because oftentimes you're in your own way. And we might think we have the answers, but just like anything else, it's that kind of butterfly effect where you get somebody come in and they're able to see things a little bit different than you maybe can in that moment. Deesha, I know we've talked about this so much. We've talked about it at length because we're in conversations all the time with people who are at that culminating point. Do I sell? Do I do like an ESOP? Do I bring in maybe another partner? Maybe I could get some additional cash flow that way. So I know this is something that you and I have talked a lot on.
And that exhaustion as well. Making decisions when you're that exhausted is never a good place. You're emotionally very charged, and sometimes sleeping on it doesn't fix it either. You really do just need to take a step away. Like literally in your head, you take a step back and then go, what is it that I actually need to get to where I want to be? And it's a messy middle. On the other side of it, there's probably some really great returns and rewards and investments. You just have to see it through that phase, or you don't. It's a hard question you have to ask yourself, preferably not when you're that exhausted and emotionally charged.
So let me ask you the next question, because I couldn't agree with you more. And there's a shift that has to happen, whether you're going to exit or whether you're going to decide to take yourself out of that role. And your identity is wrapped in that role. And Deesha, you mentioned identity earlier in this segment. And so talk us through, what does that shift actually look like? What does it look like moving from the builder and the operator to more that founder mentality, where you're passing the baton on your roles, even if you still have the company? And then what identity shift has to happen if you're going to actually prepare to exit? Because a lot of times deals fall apart at the table, not because of the money, not because of the due diligence, not because of anything other than the owner gets cold feet and they're afraid of what is going to happen next, or that they're lacking in purpose once this happens. So can you kind of dive into that a little bit for our viewers?
What got you to where you are now won't get you to where you want to be. I say that very often, right? And you started as the builder, which means that you know a lot about everything at all times. And I say many times that just because we can, or just because we're capable and we can, doesn't mean that we want to. We're probably very good at the beginning, even, you know, as you get higher up in your business and your business starts growing and you start seeing returns from the hard work that you've put in, that actually the people that you surround yourself with and the team that you build is really, really important to where you go to. There's also a mindset shift there, because you can't be in control of everything at all times. That leads to a different type of burnout and exhaustion, because now you've built an absolutely brilliant business that can't operate without your control mechanisms in every corner of it. And Brittany and I have talked about this at length, about building, you know, an A-star team around you and making sure that the people that are supporting you are probably better at doing all of those individual things than you are, even though I do believe we all get to the stage as founders, CEOs, that we think that we can do absolutely everything and we do it amazingly well, because we don't know what we don't know yet, right?
You're absolutely right. So let me shift to the deal that you have done that maybe after the fact you thought you ended up giving something up that you didn't realize you valued as much, or after the fact you're like, man, I wish I would have negotiated this differently. What was that? Like, think about the first deal where you were like, you know, that didn't go as planned, or I didn't really think about this. I wish I would have thought about this and renegotiated in this way.
I can start with that one. You know, before we even get into maybe the desire for renegotiation or shifting things, I think there is not enough emphasis in the M&A world, mergers and acquisitions world, that talks about the emotional side of it. And mm-hmm. so when you get on the other side, you cannot predict or anticipate the feeling and the emotion that comes from all partners involved, whether you're the founder or your previous, you know, partner that has bought into a firm or whatever that is, there's a lot of weight that's carried. So I just want to honor that and call that out, because I don't know that people can truly anticipate how much emotion is wrapped up. You've been in this together, you've built together, you've shown up every day. So that's so important. And I think I'm a huge believer in working with either a coach or a consultant or somebody who actually helps and specifically works with entrepreneurs who have gone through or are going through exits, because it helps you get ahead of the game a little bit before, you know, those things pop up or those feelings pop up that you can't anticipate. So as far as the actual negotiation, I think that it's really, really important to be clear on how you want to spend your time and what level of involvement you want, if any, with the company post-sale. So if you're not incredibly clear on what that looks like, that's where all of a sudden you might have animosity creep in, or regret, or, you know, that feeling of what the heck did I just do? So I think it's really important to look at, how do I want to spend my time? What is the level of involvement? Understand that things are going to change, even though a broker may say, no, everything's going to be fine. If you stay on, it's going to be just like normal, just like everything else. It's not. It is not normal. It is different.
Right about that. You're absolutely right about that. Unfortunately, we do have to take a brief break. But the reality, folks, is the deal isn't the end of the deal, and it's all about clarity. Next up, we're going to dive into partnerships, because long before the exit, you made a decision that either set you up or boxed you in, coming up right after these messages. Welcome back to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm Jen Godet here with Deesha and Brittany, and we're talking all about exits, partnerships, and everything else in between regarding our businesses. Listen, you don't lose in the deal. You lose in the partnership you chose before it. We've got very seasoned guests on to talk about what people have gotten wrong and some of the things, Brittany and Deesha, that I've seen kind of behind the curtain. They're chasing an opportunity or a paycheck over alignment. Maybe they ignore some early red flags when they're going down this, especially if they're partnering with capital in order to enter M&A or growth or scale. Maybe they're not fully defining the roles and the exits up front. And what we see is you choose a partner that hasn't really been tested before the deal, and then all of a sudden stress and conflict hits or downturn hits. What do you each, and I want each of you to weigh in, what do you look for in a partnership, whether you're partnering with capital or you're having a partial exit and you're going to ride up with that and be involved? Like, what are the things you're looking for in your business partnerships so that you will trust them in that downturn or in that stressful situation?
I would say that I'm always looking for connection. What's the human behind the deal or the partnership look like? What are they like in their personal lives? What are they like with their friends? And I like to get to know them as human beings, not just the deals and the partnerships that they're making. Then what kind of good do they do with the money or the business that they also decide to partner with or venture with? It tells a lot about a human being and about, you know, it's all very well to be partners when it's going good. When things take a dive or a wrong turn, it's important that you know that your partners have your back and you're all in it together and you're aligned on the big things, the bigger goal, the bigger vision, where you're heading. Brittany, me and you have spoke about this quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that I would add too is, and this can go all the way from you know, you're considering getting into maybe startup, all the way to you're, you know, engaging with a private equity firm to bring in additional capital and exposure and whatever else. You know, I think that cultural alignment is absolutely a necessity in productive, we'll call it, deals. So being able to make sure that, do you believe in the same thing? Like when times do get tough, or financials are a little bit stressed or whatever that is, do you share the mentality? You know, is it we're going to go buckle down and come up with new revenue generating opportunities, or are we going to cut? And what does that look like? And so if you do not share those core principles and those core values, I think that's where things can go south really fast. And that's where all of a sudden your customers, your clients, they start noticing that incongruency as well. So just choosing people that are completely aligned with how you've done business so that it becomes an extension of yourself, an extension of your capabilities, versus, you know, just fueling cash or whatever your driving forces that caused you to go down that route in the first place.
You know, I'm immediately thinking about this, and I'm thinking back to like the first partners. I've been in business since, you know, 2001. I've been in this scenario. And I think about some of the early partners and how I thought we were aligned. And when we started the conversation about partnership, it was, hey, this is the end goal, and we're both really stoked about this end goal. And somewhere along the way, I missed some red flags. And so if you're watching this, folks, everybody has a first. We don't do this perfectly. We've all learned through fire. Like, it's not like we all of a sudden had our first deal and it went perfectly. It didn't. That's a lie. Anybody who tells you everything was perfect is lying to you. That's just not how business goes, or life for that matter. So when we're thinking about the people who are looking at their first business partnership in the viewership, or maybe their first big capital partner, how do they get past the first conversation that always is, you know, the honeymoon conversation, and we're always aligned and we always want to do this and everything's hunky-dory? How do we suss out that maybe there's a little bit of misalignment before we ink the deal? Do you have a question?
So I think initially, and this is, I actually love this question. Jen, I would guess when you look at your partnerships or the examples that you gave, it's because you as a human are constantly growing. You are not the same person. And this is an assumption, but from our conversations, you're not the same person that you were when you first started in business. You're not the same person that you were 5 years ago, and you're not the same person you're going to be in 5 years. So I liken it to marriage or relationships. I think it's important when you get that initial foundation, you definitely have to ask the tough questions. You've got to spend time together. You used it as kind of the, we'll call it the dating phase, the honeymoon phase. You know, I think it's spending time, not jumping into something too soon before you truly get to know who it is that you're looking to go in partnership with. But I think on the back end of it, there needs to be defined checkpoints and a common understanding and agreement that as people change and evolve, you're able to have those sit downs and have kind of that regrowth conversation. What's changed? What does life look like in a couple of years? How have you changed? How have your viewpoints changed? The minute we stop having those conversations and creating that intentional space, I think that's where partnerships start to fall apart. And that's where people can feel betrayed, when in reality, it might just be that somebody's growing and the other's grown in a different direction.
Viscerally, you're absolutely on point, and you're accurate in everything that you've said. And I'm curious, Deesha, because you take a very human approach to this. And, you know, we talked about identity, and our identity shifts, and it shifts in life phases. Maybe when we started the partnership, I was in a certain phase of life, or a person was just at the beginning, and now they have children, or now their children are going off to college, and they have different stressors in their everyday life. How do you handle those sort of outside of the business world, outside of the work engagement situations that sometimes bleed into what we're experiencing with the people we're partnered with, or even this happens with our team members? How do you handle that, and how do you show up from that aligned leadership standpoint?
I think when you're a leader, you're always, not everybody, I've met plenty of partners who are not always on the path of continuous development, is what I would say. But most of us, we start in one place. And like you said, Jen, we make so many mistakes or failures and we learn from them. We pick ourselves up and we move on from that. And I do think there's a lot to be said for asking outright, how many mistakes have you made and what did you learn from them? Or how did you evolve as a person? I always say, especially if there's a first conversation about alignment, there's a lot to be said about gut feeling, but also about being really clear on what's important to you as a person when you are building a business and how you would like to build that business. It's really easy to come into business and have this, like, you know, idealistic version of what it looks like and how, where you would like to fit in and where you would like to be. But as a person, you change your, I'm not saying your values and morals change, but the way that you think changes, the way that you want to grow a business changes, the way that you want to serve your audience will change too. And it's being self-reflective enough to say, as a human being, I've come from here and I've moved to here. And anyone that comes into your world, you also want to know if they are on the same growth path as you. They may not be on the same trajectory, but are they on the same path?
I really appreciate that. And I couldn't concur more. I mean, I've learned so many hard lessons over the years, as I'm sure you ladies have as well. And so I'm going to liken this to the marriage again. This is why, folks, if you're at home, this is why it's so important you assess your core values, because you can't change someone's core values. Core values are there. That's part of who we are. But also, don't forget the prenup. There's a work prenup so that if and when we do grow apart, if and when we are no longer fully aligned in where we want to be and how we want to grow a business, there's a defined exit strategy that we've agreed on when things were still going well. Everybody likes to put pressure and joke about the prenup in a marriage and, well, it's going to be fine. But the reality is 60% of marriages are better and in divorce. So the same thing happens in business and business partnerships. Having that off ramp is equally as important. We only have about a minute left. But Brittany, I'm going to go to you. Like, what's the most important thing that people should be thinking about in their off ramp, in that negotiation, the roles and identification, if we are going to part ways before we even ink the deal?
Yes, it is incredibly important. This is a great time to look out for yourself. I'm not a big advocate of selfishness. We could go on for days about that, but there are instances where you have to protect yourself and you have to make sure that the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and that it's all documented. There is nothing worse than a messy departure. Again, we're using this whole divorce analogy. If things are spelled out, that's why I think prenups are a beautiful thing. It takes the guesswork out of it. There's no gray area. There's no he said, she said. There's no, you know, discombobulation at the end. So making sure that you look out for yourself. And I've made the mistake before where you're trying to take care of everybody else and then you sit back and you're like, hold on, what about me? What did I want? So don't hesitate to really get clear and to have those honest conversations with your partners on both ends.
Yeah, you're right. It is absolutely not selfish for us to be taking care of our interests in every business partnership. It is so important. Folks, alignment isn't built during the deal. It's revealed under pressure. That's what stress tests every relationship. So make sure that you're structuring your business deals with an off-ramp and with very clear role identification and delineation so that there's no guesswork in there. Coming up next, the conversation most people avoid. Who actually gets access to capital, opportunity, and leadership, and why the gap exists after these important messages? Welcome back to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm Jen Godet here with Brittany and Deesha, and we are going to change gears just a little bit because before the break, I mentioned, you know, talent isn't the issue. Access is. I want to dive into women in business, and especially when we're thinking about capital allocation. You know, when we think about women in the financial conversation, it still occurs that we're underrepresented in capital, we're underexposed to deal flow. A lot of times we're under-sponsored. We get mentors that maybe have shown us the way, but they really haven't closed that financial literacy gap from us. So this isn't about capability as much as it is about exposure. So I know, Brittany, this is your jam, and this is something that you're very passionate about. Talk to me about that financial literacy gap. Why is it there and still in 2026, let's be real, why is it still there? And what can we as powerful females and even the men watching, how can we sponsor that and help alleviate that and close that gap?
You know, I'll start out by saying that I think a lot of times for women in particular, we tend to hesitate to ask for help. And this is no different when it comes to a capital raise, when it comes to the financials in our business and in our lives. So I just wanted to call that out first, that autonomy and independence is not always the path to least resistance. So I think the other thing too here is that women are less inclined, especially, you know, female entrepreneurs, let's take this segment in particular, less inclined to put themselves in the rooms that they need to be in to have and generate these conversations and these opportunities. So you look at, let's call it different, and I'll go a little bit, maybe a unique, you know, viewpoint on it, but mastermind groups, areas where people are constantly talking in deal flow. They're talking about capital raise. They're getting that exposure that they need. They're just not putting themselves in the rooms. So the conversation and the question doesn't come up. I think it's also less focus on women in particular when it comes to how to even approach that topic. I know for me, I mean, there's still hesitancy, or call it ignorance even, dare I say that word, in how to approach it in certain capacities. So I think the starting point is making sure that you are putting yourself in the rooms with the people that actually know how to go about it, so that you don't feel like you're the lone wolf trying to navigate a man's world. I mean, dare I say that? So I think that's one of the biggest issues to start with.
So let me go ahead.
I'd also add to that, that we're also almost trained to, as women, to go, we don't know 100% about that topic, whatever it may be. We don't know enough financial language to be in existing in those rooms, when the truth is we probably know enough, and we may very well know more than our male counterparts. We just don't know that yet until we start entering those conversations.
Well, you know, there's a couple of thoughts I had, and I think maybe one of these goes to Brittany and one to Deisha, but I immediately think about, I build business athletes. I worked with elite athletes in sports medicine. I switched that over to business, and everything is about finding the edge, but finding the edge is about putting the reps in. And I think that what I'm hearing from both of you is we're not putting ourselves in the room. We're waiting until we're ready, instead of putting those reps in and building that resilience, that toughness, and learning as we pitch and we pitch and we pitch. Because let's face it, you know, the first time I raised capital, I got a whole heck of a lot of failing on my face and nose before somebody pulled me aside and said, you know, this is actually the language that you should be using in here. And I had no idea, because I had hired mentors to help me through the process, but I wasn't speaking the private equity language. I was speaking more of a traditional banking language. And so I think it's about putting in the reps, and then the other side of this is, I believe, more of an identity and a societally conditioned piece. And that's, you know, we're not supposed to talk about money. A lot of us were raised where you just don't discuss money. It's rude, or whatever it was that came from our upbringing or the way that we were raised. So can you guys weigh in on those things? Like, how can we create that safe space for women to put in the reps so that they can build that financial literacy and that confidence, because it's what we're talking about, so they can do deals, so they can structure them appropriately, so they can raise capital? And then also, how do we shift that mindset or that old belief structure that we shouldn't be talking about money?
It's interesting, and Deisha chime in here too, because this is a hot topic. So when it comes to the conversation and the topic of money in particular, that is absolutely. So you can walk into a room, men and women alike, and you'll have a man that has no problem stating exactly the target that they want for their business, exactly how they're going to get there, the path. Here's how much capital I'm going to raise. Here's where it's self-funded. Here's my targets. Here's my goals. And you get women, and I'm not saying all, this isn't a blanket conversation, because I know many powerful women who are not afraid to step into that space. But I think there's this little bit of hesitation in how will I appear? What will people think? You know, even going back to family members, we've had these conversations within our Trailblazers community where women are like, I'm not super comfortable talking about that in and amongst even peers, colleagues, family, whatever. So you have these huge aspirations for your business, but again, no space or language to talk about it. So the biggest piece of advice I can give, only speaking from experience, is to pair up with mentors who have actually done what you want to do. There's a whole lot of lip service out there, and there's a whole lot of people that'll say they have the solution. They know how to get you into deal flow. They know exactly the approach. Jen, kind of what you were talking about. There's a big difference in banking language versus private equity language and what they're looking for, and in turn, what you can get out of that. So I think partnering with somebody or having a mentorship relationship with somebody that's done what you want to accomplish, they can actually speak from experience versus that kind of coach or teacher mindset. Deesha, what else did I miss there?
I also think that women have to be invited to the table, and there has to be a welcoming way of enabling women to talk about money and be in those rooms and be confident enough to appear in those rooms. That would be the other bit that I would add to that bit. The way that we look at money and finance is different, and it's a man's world that we're pitching in at the moment, at the end of the day, if you're looking for capital or investment or any type of partnering opportunities as well.
I love that you brought that up, because it's absolutely true. And as someone who spent a career in that male-dominated field, I mean, you sort of change how you posture. And I think part of the confidence issue for a lot of women that I have seen is I don't want to come across as aggressive, because when we do stand up and assert ourselves, that's the feedback that we have gotten in the past. And so I would love to hear your take on this, because also this isn't just a women's issue. It's truly a performance issue for companies and investors, because I also see it when a strong, powerful woman has exited and now she becomes an investor. Well, that's a learning curve. It's a different set of rules that we're playing. It's different things that we're thinking about. And I'm speaking from experience. I missed the boat on my first one when you fail forward. So what are you seeing, and what advice or how are you with Trailblazers sort of creating that space so that people can step up and put in the reps so that they can start to hear that lingo and use that lingo so that they can build that confidence to step into it? And when somebody says, hey, you're aggressive, say, no, I'm just assertive. I'm expressing my goals as much as the next person.
So I want to chime in, Deesha, and I know you've got something too here. So there's one thing that I want to say is, Jen, when you're talking about that, you know, stepping in with aggression or that fear of, you know, being perceived that way, I think we also have to remember that we have to show up in our own strengths. And that assertiveness is a much better word, because my approach might be different than Deesha's approach, that might be different from Jen, your approach. And so I think sometimes we almost have to remember we don't have to mask up. We don't have to show up as that aggressor either, even though it might feel like the environment calls for that. Living naturally into who you are and staying congruent with that can actually help you get further faster, because people can sense when you're off, when you're out of congruency, when you're acting per se. So that's the one thing that I wanted to add, is be mindful of showing up as you, but sharpening your strengths and how you approach. Deesha, what else there?
I would add that being assertive is the equivalent of having ambition, and being ambitious and you being just you, aligned with you, can coexist. They don't have to be different people.
Thank you for that. You know, it's really funny, because I was literally last week in New York, and I was with a group, and we were talking to Joe Michelli, and he is all about using your authentic voice and your brand voice, and how you do that, exactly what you're speaking to. And so I'm reminded so many times that if you're a female in business and you are more of a gentle energy, you can still be very powerful in that gentle energy. And I think that's what Brittany and Deesha are saying. They're saying, listen, own what it is that you want. Don't be afraid to ask for sponsorship and put in the reps. Find a community that's going to support you, but not just support you, but also create exposure for you to deals, to capital, to decision-making rooms. Don't just keep staying and playing small in these rooms where you feel comfortable, because it truly is when you get into a room where you can learn, where you can grow, and you can be exposed to some of the things that you really need to do to put in the reps. That's where the real power is. We do have to take a brief break, but I'm just going to say we don't fix gaps with intention. We fix them by changing who gets access. And that's about putting ourselves in the room so that we can learn and we can grow. Coming up in our final segment, we're going to talk about how to build a company that actually scales, leadership, systems, and optionality after these messages. Welcome back to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm Jen Godet, and I am here with Deesha and Brittany, and we have been talking about a whole lot of things. And before the break, we left off with, it's important to put yourself in rooms that you're uncomfortable in so that you can learn, so that you can grow, so that you can have access to deal flow and really push yourself to the next level. It doesn't happen when we're in comfort zone. It happens when we push outside. But now I want to talk about, if your business only works because of you, you don't really have a company. You have a job. But it's a job with pressure. So I want to dive in with you ladies, because this is a real core area of your expertise. How do we take ourselves out of that founder-led, founder-dependent situation where we've created a job for ourselves accidentally when we meant to create a business? How do we shift that into leadership that's actually scalable?
Deesha, do you want to take this one first?
Sure. So I would, number one, say, most business owners fall into business. They don't necessarily go into business with the intention of building something. The intention of building something comes later. And when you're a founder who is a bottleneck now, from what I'm gathering, you're asking, Jen, is you can't get past a certain stage. And that involves a degree of self-reflection, understanding the business that you've built right now, and are you really the person who's best served to do everything that you just set out to do? Because then you did buy yourself an extremely high pressure job with people around you that can't support you. So what I would say is you do need time out, and you have to figure out the who's in your business, not the hows of how you're going to get to where you want to be. Is your vision outlined? Do your team know it? And have you built an aligned team with that vision? So you're building a tribe around you and they are all singing towards a shared vision. So are you a leader who's leading with vision, humanity, and goals now? And did your identity shift to be that person that you can envision leading a business that you would like to lead?
The other thing I want to just chime in there too is getting really comfortable, because we just came off the segment where we're talking about capital raise and all of that, but getting comfortable with the notion of margin compression and understanding that it takes investment into yourself and your future to grow and to become that next level company. The other thing I would say too, as you're making that shift, one of the things that I dare say this, it's not easy, but it's maybe simple, is, oh, well, I can just bring in a partner. If they invest a little bit, that's going to take care of my cash flow, and then I'll have another brain in the mix, and it'll all be great, and everything will be sunshine. And that is often not the case. I know there's one big business strategist out there who has advocated for you know, you need some aspect of marketing to get to your next level, or you need some aspect of human capital to get to your next level. And so he'll take on minority investors because then he gets his cash feed and he's able to grow and thrive and whatever. But the problem with that is all of a sudden you're kind of in bed with them. You are then tied to them at a deeper level. So it goes all the way back to the beginning of our conversation here to make sure that you're making super strategic moves as you move out of that job as a founder to really sitting in that founder seat and taking the company to the next level.
You know, I want to kind of hit on what you just said there because it is so true. So many times we do look towards a capital partner and then we take on these minority leaderships, and I'm going to flip that and say from an investor standpoint, I don't want an investment. I don't want to invest with someone that I'm that minority because I have noticed it's often the problems that come from the minority investors. We don't really, like, as a minority investor, you don't really have a level of control that maybe you would want. And it can cause additional challenges and bottlenecks if it's not fully aligned. So I love that you brought that up because I've seen it on the investor side and I've seen it also on the business side as well. And so I want to just add also, Disha, you were talking about having the right team and having an aligned team and leading with that vision. But sometimes people get to this and they have the right people on the bus. They're just in the wrong seats, or multiple people own the outcome of a specific objective, right? And what I've found is everything needs one owner, one person accountable, because it gets muddy. Can you kind of speak a little bit to that? And how do we as a founder, as we shift and we lead in and we're establishing this clarity, how do we articulate that to people who maybe are in a role that they're not cut out to be at this next level of growth, so that we're aligned and we're doing this in a way that is beneficial to everybody involved?
I would say, how have you structured your business? How have the roles been defined? And what roles, responsibilities, tasks have you put together? Is there overlap between roles, like you said, Jen? Because the buck has to stop with somebody. There has to be, like, you assign a deadline. So someone has to be responsible for it, take it forward and, you know, take it to the end and then restart. Or if that particular role needs, you know, a rehaul, let's say, so to speak. But the roles, I always say, should be based on strengths. So what does that role require from a human being? And if they're in the wrong role, where could you replace them so they are best served to, so they're best positioned to serve you and the business? I would say that they're two different things. So they're best positioned to serve the business, and someone who is supporting you, you need someone probably who is very different in their strengths compared to what you are. So there's a good complement going on there.
You know, I love that you said that. And it's really funny because one of the things that I have found when I've gone in, I buy businesses. And when I go in, a lot of times what they've done is built an echo chamber where everybody has the same sort of skill set, mm-hmm. or the same sort of ideas. And I immediately walk away from that deal. And it's because they've had an echo chamber and they're missing some things. And when you've been in that yes, yes, yes community, and if I see a very glare, often the out, like it's just with consulting, right? An outside perspective, you can see so much more. If I see that and I see a very glaring challenge or an opportunity that's been overlooked, I know from the get-go, I'm gonna have some challenges because they're living in a yes echo chamber environment. How do you sort of switch or flip that script very briefly so that we can close out after this question?
I can chime in on that one. Flipping the script of the echo chamber, yes, you need diverse opinions. And I think it's the due diligence of the founder to create the environment that speaks to safety, that says, I don't want you to agree with me. It's like those hilarious ChatGPT memes you see where people do skits and they say, yes, you're so smart. Like, that's so great. We have AI that can agree with us now. We don't want human beings that are around us telling us that everything we do is great, because you will never grow. So I think it's important as the leader to set that foundation to say, hey, we need diverse skill sets. I need you to challenge me. I need you to push me, because if you've done hiring right as a founder leader, That means that you've put people in positions where they are way smarter than you, where they're way better at it, and they should be advising you. Otherwise, you might not have the right person in the right seat.
So we do have to wrap. You know, the goal isn't just to build a business that runs, folks. It's to build one that gives you options, because that gives you the strongest position no matter where you are in business, whether you need to take yourself out of the role, whether you're looking to walk away. And if you're thinking about building partnering, thinking about an exit, today's the day to start acting like it. The leaders who win don't wait for the deal to get serious. They build it like it's already on the table. We've had such excellent conversation today with Brittany and Deesha. How can people reach out to each of you ladies if they'd like to learn more?
So you can visit us at thetrailblazers.com or contact us on the website align-ps.com.
Thank you so much for that. And I'm going to put one final request to you, because I'm a coach. I'm on this show because I believe that everybody should be able to take an action no matter where they are. I'm going to ask each of your ladies, based off of the conversation we had today, if somebody is watching and they feel stuck in their business, what is the one action that they could take to powerfully move them forward that they can take immediately today? And I'm going to start with you, Brittany.
Immediately today is schedule a clarity session with yourself. Schedule space to set some intentionality for your future and to get crystal clear what you want. Even if you think that you have clear goals right now, schedule those at least on an every 90-day rolling basis to make sure that you stay aligned to who you are and to what you want for your future, and that you identify those growth spots we talked about.
Deesha?
I would say, who can you ask for help today? We are terrible at asking for help. Who's that one person you could turn to and you know that they would help you? And that's something you could action today.
And I'm going to give you a third option, and that's put yourself in a room that you're uncomfortable in. That room that you're looking at and you're like, I'm not there yet. I'm going to challenge each and every one of you watching today to put yourself in that room that you think you're not there yet. Don't be afraid to invest in yourself so that you can accelerate your growth. Unfortunately, all good things come to an end, including this show, but you have three potential action steps, one from each of us today, that you can start today, not tomorrow, not next week, but right now. Because listening to us for the past hour is fine and dandy, but the growth happens when you take action. That action helps create the forward momentum that's going to actually yield the results that you want in your business. So Brittany, Deesha, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate having you. Thank you for your expertise.
Thanks, Jen.
Thanks, Jen.
And you, yes, you, we are going to close out now, but the good news is we're here same time, same station next week. So until then, win today, win this week, and I'll see you next time.